What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew. This is the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I'm with legendary coach Dan John in Salt Lake City. We talk about his accomplishments in strength and conditioning over the last 50 years. What is the perfect program that he would recommend to everyone? What works for everyone? We go over some more technical stuff like internal pressure, him and Pavel's easy strength. And then we go into some stuff about aging as an athlete, do's and don'ts of building power. There's a lot of little pearls of wisdom in here. I hope you love the show.
This is Dan John. You're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast.
What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew. This is the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm in Salt Lake City with the legend Dan John. He's been nice enough to invite me into his home. I think we've got a very good show on the way for you. Thanks for having me, Coach.
Hey, you're welcome. You can see that sometimes it's a little busy here, but it was,
absolutely.
It's cleared up now, so
yeah,
it's
we got
good.
Thanksgiving coming in a couple of days. He says he's got 60 people coming downstairs.
40, a mere 40. Yeah,
love it. If you don't already know about Coach Dan John, you can go Google and find thousands of articles, several books he's written, etc. A couple of his biggest, he's a two-time Highland Games world champion, a Fulbright scholar. He's coached some of the most elite athletes in the world, from track and field to other professional athletes and other organizations, etc. So if you want more information on some of his accolades, just go Google him. Kind of going along
or,
with
or
that.
Come to the house.
You know? Or come to the house.
That's right. You learn a lot about me when you come to the house. Yeah.
Love it. Just to give people a starting point, what are you most proud of as an athlete, and what are you most proud of as a coach and academic?
Well, as an athlete, the fact that when I was in the ninth grade and weighed 118 pounds and bench pressed 85 pounds for 8 reps, I decided to go to Utah State University and throw the discus with the best discus coach in the world. The fact that I wasn't a dumb kid, but I'd like to have sat down with me and said, okay, you're not a dumb kid, but let's look at this whole thing. Mm-hmm. But that's the power of, successful goal setting. I had a great vision of what I wanted. I could just do things and I've done other things. I've gotten a lot of good things have happened in my life, in my athletic career. But I'd have to say that when my father yelled up from downstairs, Danny, Utah State's on the phone, which is always funny because my dad would yell to tell me there was a phone call to be, Chico State's on the phone, Stanford's on the phone, it was just funny. There was Utah State, and the first words out of Coach Mon's mouth were, "I'm Coach Ralph Mon from Utah State University, and I want to offer you a full ride scholarship." Mm-hmm. And it took a couple of years, but it all happened.
Right.
So that right there would be it, because it was a culmination of a lot of things. There's certainly some championships that are fun stories, but right. That's the highlight.
So would you say was that a defining moment in your life? Or,
Yeah. I mean, TIFF has been with me for a number of really amazing moments in my career. I can remember picking up a cell phone. I was one of the first people to have a cell phone and calling my brother Gary, telling him I won, this one event, and just how excited he was when he heard my voice. There's a famous video of Tiffany sprinting out of the stands to throw herself around me when I won a big, big competition. So really, when it comes down, you'll notice that every one of the stories has people in it. And that's something I discovered in this very intensive thing we did years ago with the psychological things at the Olympic Training Center. It's so important. The way I tick is that the people is the most important part of my stories.
Okay.
Coaching, in fact, I just bumped into a few of them. This is a long time ago. This is before I met Tiff. We've been married 28 years, so this is a while ago. I bumped into a couple players on this junior varsity football team I had. And we went undefeated. But the funny thing is, we only had 12 or 13 guys. Mm-hmm. And we went to a game one time, and the other coach comes over and goes, "Dan, you know, we don't have a running back." And I go, "You know, you can't say that. You know, these are good kids. You know, maybe they're not the best news. No, we don't have a running back." So half an hour before the game, I took a kid and I did my best to show him what we could show mm-hmm. him. And that, I loved it. We ran this weird defense because we didn't have linebackers. They were right. with the varsity. You know, one time I'm standing on the sidelines, I look at a kid and I go, "Why aren't you out there?" He goes, "Coach, I'm not on the kickoff team." I go, "Well, neither am I." So that was just delightful because it was every week overcoming just the numbers problem. I mean, if a kid right. got hurt, we had an extra kid, but one. And, it was just so much fun. They were such great kids. Because that was so joyful. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, when working with Paul Northway, you know, those years that we took him and obviously it's all on him, but, you know, and having him being the best discus thrower in the nation mm-hmm. in high school, that was pretty fun. Mm-hmm. There's lots of other stuff, too. Sometimes the best coaching I've ever done is pick up the phone on a Saturday morning and I hear, "Hey, thank you, I won." That's, mm-hmm. I hate to say it, in some ways, that's my favorite coaching moments, is when I get a phone call from another state or mm-hmm. some other time zone and someone we've worked with a long time mm-hmm. has won. That's, I guess in a lot of ways, that's my favorite kind of coaching, just being part of the process. Right. You know? Yeah.
Some way, somehow, huh?
Yeah.
So I want to get a little bit technical to start out.
Sure. Academics.
Yeah, yeah.
My first
writing, all
my
that.
My first published paper would have been 1982. My first.
What published. Was it?
It was on King Arthur.
Okay.
Yeah. It was on Beowulf.
Beowulf, wow.
Yeah. So it was on, it's funny, I still use the material.
No shit.
I still use the information. Yeah. I'd given a talk on King Arthur at the regional conference on English studies. Mm-hmm. And then I did another one the next year and they published it. It was on, but it's still, I mean, I look back on it now real quick. The warriors in Beowulf only speak in the pure present. Mm-hmm. The king speaks.
What does that sound like? The pure present, you say?
Pure present. I'm here right now.
Okay.
So you ask me about my past, a warrior would say, "I have no past." What about tomorrow? Okay. I might be dead. Kings speak past, present, future, every time. And so it's the insight I have is that sometimes a coach or an athlete, sometimes mm-hmm. athletes tend to be pure warriors. They don't want to hear about the last Olympics. They want to hear about today. Mm-hmm. And the future, you just don't know. Where coaches have to live as more like coaches kings. Mm-hmm. And then there's a couple other things that I pulled out of it that I'm proud of. But
wow.
The one nice thing about that is that, you know, there are diets that are kind of warrior-y, you know, where like Chris Schubert's V diet, it's a warrior diet. You drink 6 protein shakes a day and that's it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not healthy. That's what not. The warrior diet where you only eat, like I know a guy who just eats fast food on it. He just goes mm-hmm. to McDonald's and eats as much as he can shove in his mouth.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's okay. Okay. But that is someone living in the pure present.
Right.
That's not a way to look at living to be 58 or 68 years of age.
Right.
So there is some value, you know, in that. So, yeah. So didn't want
to
stop
pros and cons to both. No, absolutely.
Yeah,
thank you.
But I just want to make sure I brought. It's hard to believe.
That's very interesting.
Most of your listeners weren't alive when I published
it. Right, right. How many articles do you think you've written that have gone in magazines and online? I've read dozens myself.
Well, I mean, I write a column every week for Men's Health. Mm-hmm. I wrote for 10 years a weekly column, so that's 520. Mm-hmm. So for
Men's Health?
No, for another newspaper, okay. Intermountain Catholic. Mm-hmm. And then at one time, I think I would keep a list of them. And then now I just, it's certainly in the thousands. I mean, there's no question it's in the
no doubt, huh? Yeah. No doubt.
Because of, so there's, you know, the weekly column with Men's Health and the other stuff. It just, there's just the volume of those mm-hmm. would knock up the other. Oh, probably with T Nation. I've got to be sneaking up in the high. I mean, certainly in the 50s, I'd imagine, with T-Nation.
That's where I've found most of your stuff.
You'll find a lot in
there. So much good stuff.
I mean, they don't even have the early ones. Mm-hmm. When you check on my profile, they don't have the early ones. Mm-hmm. So there's probably another, dozen that they don't list.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, before we even get into stuff, do you have any suggestions, maybe do's and don'ts for any young coaches that want to get into writing, explore writing?
Oh.
How did you get into it? All that kind of stuff.
Well, I actually talked about it in a recent thing. It's you can, if you go to On Target Press, a publication, OTP.com.
Okay.
You can read the whole thing there, but you know, a lot of people think that writing is a gift, you know, little angels come over with a handful of
the creativity angel.
It's not, it's work. So what I do is I get up first thing in the morning, about six, my wife, my goal before I take her down to tracks that she takes the public transit in, is to, get all my college work done. I'm an instructor at Columbia College at Religious Studies. Get all that done for sure and try to clean off my my basic emails. But that warms me up. And then when I get back, it is writing. And in fact, I can show you. Yeah, right. Well, it's right there on the floor, my daily to-do list. And then every day I have a writing assignment of some kind.
How long is your to-do list? Just however many tasks there are, or do you give yourself a certain number?
But you're on it.
Okay.
This interview is on it.
Yep.
You know, I guess actually I should go backwards. The to-do list I write before I go to bed.
Okay.
So I take all my supplements, my bedtime supplements. Like last night was a great night. Tiff got home. I'd made a stew. We thought it was going to snow. And so we hot tubbed and took our supplements, watched the game. We were both done by about 8 o'clock. So really, to be a good writer, it's the night before.
Right.
But I have one little thing I do. I got from Pavel, and it's a great idea. I don't eat until all my writing assignments are done and my workout is done.
Okay.
So here's the funny thing. It's not that breakfast is bad or good. There's nothing to it. But eating takes so much longer of your time. And all of a sudden, once you eat, you just get squirreled. You know, squirrel. So fasting, I hate to call it fasting, but not eating keeps you just in the little zone of, I got to finish this.
Right.
And then at 9:30, people from all over the world literally come to my house and we train. Today was a little different because my garage door broke, so the mechanic was here. And so we did, so we got on my front lawn and worked out, but usually in my garage, and we train. And then after that, I finally eat, you know, after about... We sneak up on about an 18-hour fast every day
for
my first meal,
I love it. So you're looking at 10, 11 a.m. is your first meal, you think? Or?
Yeah, 11.
Okay.
11.
And by then, you've already accomplished probably what most people would say is a successful day, right?
Right.
A productive day.
Sure, sure. Okay. I've knocked off articles. I've knocked off this thing called Wandering Weights. I've knocked off... Or sometimes I just resource up. I just... Okay, I'm going to need this. I'm going to need that. You know, like right now, you're not here, but he can see the stack of books that I'm kind of reviewing right now. There's an article I pulled out that I want to go over. You know, so that's just sometimes I just put that stuff out there and kind of go through them. You know, especially when you've got a long term project like a book or like I have a new PowerPoint. I have a new lecture. My lectures start off at about. A minute and a half and end up being 8 hours. So that, but you can see the you can literally see the process of things filling in.
So you have some times that are for actually doing the work, and then you have some times that are preparing for the work
And mulling it over. Yeah. And I told Josh Hillis this, and it's a good idea. So what I do, I don't have any out, but inside of here and inside of there are manila folders. And what I like to do is get 3 manila folders and write the 3 big ideas.
Okay.
You know. And
for a project or different projects? So,
and if I have 5 minutes, those 3 ideas become what I talk about, the bullet points.
Okay.
And then I start, I call it the accordion method. I just keep filling in. And so I try, if I hear something interesting, you know, I write that down and I put it on the one that it fits. And sometimes I'll make circles and squares and triangles, try to connect those information. It works best. Either or is a terrible way of looking at most things. But what I do find is that, let's go through it. Like, tough, reasonable it's the first chapter before we go. Tough okay. and reasonable. People want.
And this is the first chapter of his new book.
Before we go. So tough is people want tough workouts, mm-hmm. tough diets. Well, I think that's idiotic. Mm-hmm. I want people to have reasonable workouts and reasonable okay. diets. So tough, reasonable workout diet. So there we now have a quadrant. Mm-hmm. Quadrants are the easiest way to lecture I know.
Okay.
Because when I have quadrants up there, I can talk and everybody can stay with me with mm-hmm. four quadrants. Here's the important thing. There's no either or then by mm-hmm. doing it this way. So there are times of a year where you want to have a tough diet, but then I think you should have a reasonable workout. And there's other times a year where you might get ready for something, you want tough workouts,
okay.
but reasonable diets.
Right.
People think they can do tough diets and tough workouts, but mm-hmm. honestly, maybe once every 4 years you really can do it.
Right.
I did the Velocity diet for 28 days, but when people tell me, yeah, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, I was like, no, you're not.
Right.
You know, if you're drinking 6 protein shakes a day, your first workouts are going to be, you're going to be afraid. Now, mm-hmm. week 3, you know, you're ready to go. I mean, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, your body adapts, you mm-hmm. know. When you first try intermittent fasting, you know, you give up, don't eat for 23 hours and 59 minutes. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, how do people do this? I'm so... And then like 5 months later, you're like, that's a joke. Uh-huh. I got this. It's easy. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know.
I love that. So you're...
That's
so
my writing process.
What it's about is adherence, right? What are people actually going to be able to do long term?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's... Here's the funny thing. You just said adherence, and I agree 100%. People think they can adhere to anything, mm-hmm. but their actions and their habits prove that that's mm-hmm. not at all true. You know, Coach Mon famously said to us in our first meeting, make yourself a slave to good habits. Mm-hmm. And, I'm lucky that way because I've been lifting weights for 50 years. To mm-hmm. me, lifting weights is a habit, just like most people brush their teeth. Mm-hmm. Pardon me about that. But for most of us, most people don't floss. Mm-hmm. To go from not flossing to flossing, it's going to be a new habit.
Right.
Sorry.
No problem.
Something in the air. I just got back from Australia.
Oh, that explains it.
And Australia is in spring there. Mm-hmm. And I've got it. I think I got allergies. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. A little technical right here. So, in general... And correct me if I'm wrong. You preach whole body lifts. Mm-hmm. You love free weights, kettlebells, free weights,
TRXs.
Usually heavier all right. training. So with all of that said, what is the one program, strength program that you would suggest for the average Joe? And I know that there really is no magic bullet, but what is the most tried and true program that you think people can take and just go and they're going to see results?
Well, results, that's a different thing.
Take that wherever you like.
You said adherence and then you said results, and those two dance together, I think. It'll be a cliche, but let me just make sure I believe that the fundamental human movements trump everything else. Mm-hmm. Push, pull, hinge, squat, load mm-hmm. and carry, everything else. I believe appropriate reps, appropriate sets, and appropriate load next. And if you get if you've dialed that in, you're going to have a pretty damn boring program. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the most successful thing you can do.
So what if people don't even know what appropriate loads kind of thing?
So from what I've seen, mm-hmm. the best I can think of is Jim Wendler's 5-3-1. Uh-huh. And the reason I like Wendler's 5-3-1 is it gives the lunatics... percents. I don't believe in percents, but Jim does it for you. Mm-hmm. And then you got that last set where you kind of go for as many, mm-hmm. which taps into that other side people seem to love. And it's also just the four lifts of the military, the bench press, the deadlift, and the back squat. It's just those four lifts. From there, you can do all of his other programs. Right. I like the ones where he runs hills. I like mm-hmm. the ones, there's one he has called Bigger But Boring where you do 5 sets of 10 with 50%. So if today's a bench press day, you do your heavy 5-3-1, mm-hmm. and then you might do 5 sets of 10 on the deadlift, mm-hmm. which doesn't sound like much of a workout because no one here has ever done it. So that's, it's funny because those workouts are so hard, but on paper they look so easy.
Absolutely.
Because people love those huge 2-page long workouts. Yep. And the problem with those page workouts is that it's just, you're just doing, okay, I'm going to do dynamic stretching. Okay, people, you know, and you got 12 sets of two, you know, Yumba Y spring X's. Okay. And they do all this and they think they've done something.
Right.
Where if you deadlift 600 for a single and then you bench press 225 for 5 sets of 10, you had a really good workout.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing okay.
Right.
But and that's the hardest thing. I'm not a minimalist, but you know, I like the work of Pat Flynn, over there in Australia, Brett Turley, who I just met this week. Very nice young man. Definitely a vet from a rough deployment.
Yeah.
He's definitely got those issues. Mm-hmm. God bless you, man. And where we, you know, you just kind of keep, okay, can I cut back here? Can I cut back there? You know, we're doing a program now where the very first thing we do is 5 minutes of Turkish get-ups without any load. You just kind of roll and stand up, roll and stand up. Roll.
Okay.
And then people who do it don't need very much warming up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could not get a college track athlete to do 5 minutes. Well, I guess you could. I mean, they're smart kids.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to, you know, they want that list of 12 magic movements.
Right.
They want a groovy name to it. Super 7 stretch, you know, the Magnificent 12. Or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever day, you know, what they call it. But really, 5 minutes of naked Turkish get-ups is going to be just as valuable for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're trying to do this thing every day where we do one-arm press, chin, dip, and TRX work every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 5 days a week, but we just vary the loads and vary the reps and sets every day because, you know, it's the easy strength formula.
Right.
And from there, we try to do the conditioner work and the carries and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And people look at that and go, well, there's nothing to it. It's like, 'cause you didn't do it.
Right.
You didn't do the workout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's nothing to it. I mean, we do these little crazy challenges where we take 5 minutes or 10 minutes and do one exercise for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, why do you do that? I go, well, and should I count reps? I go, you will the first time or two, but after a while, you just won't. You'll just work out for 5 minutes and get the results of what you get. So I know that I'm a little bit contrary to what comes to this kind of thing, but, you know, it's just, we've made it too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And we just really have. You know, the easiest thing I think you can do is get strong. You
right.
lift weights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for mobility, you know, flexibility, you stretch, you know. It's just not that complicated.
Right.
And yet we've turned it into this, it's like trying to send somebody to Jupiter, you know. How do you pack for a trip to Jupiter? Well, I'd pack light if I were you, you know.
Yeah.
Better pack what you need.
Yep.
And you better pack what you don't know what you need yet, because you'll need that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I think the same way about training. We just make things so complex that we miss the basic stuff. Is what you what you know. This book I just came out a couple months ago called "Can You Go?" Well, the whole book is based on this one principle. It's not what you need. Check that. It's not what you want to do. It's what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need flexibility work, that's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a proper squat, you need to learn how to do that.
Right.
So. Just because you want, you know, to do curls and wrist curls and reverse wrist curls, that's great. But, you know, if your waistline is 60 inches around and you're 5 feet tall, that's not
right.
what you need, man. Okay. So that's my philosophy.
Thank you. Thank you. I came across a summary you did of Pavel's Easy Strength. I think that was his concept, Easy Strength.
We co-wrote the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
And... So yeah, could you go over the three principles? Train as heavy as possible, as often as possible, as fresh as possible. What does that mean?
I'm not sure I can actually go through it better. That's really that's it.
So
heavy, often, and fresh. So the idea is that there is no every day connects to the day before. In my case, when I first did, let's just do two of the exercises I did. I did thick bar deadlifts. And I did incline bench press. Now, I did three others, but it'll get confusing. And I left. At first, I just had 165 pounds in the bar, which was roughly half my incline bench max. And I just got in, did two sets of five, and then I walked over to the thick bars. And I think I had that set at, oh gosh, 55 plus. So, sorry, the math is a little different because they're not normal bars. Mm-hmm. So I guess I had it set for 145, and I did the Raptor C-grip on it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and done. Well, did that, and I just left the weights on the bar. I just left them on. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I was like, this is way too easy, so I added weight. I don't feel like lifting today, so I took weight off. If I felt like lifting, I lift. Mm-hmm. If I, you know, and all I did was two sets of five. I have a client now doing one set of five now.
One set of five.
Yeah.
Fat grip deadlift.
Whatever. Okay. So you pick five exercises, you do one set of five, and you walk out the door. That's it. You're done. Mm-hmm. One set of five, you're out the door. And on day 22, by myself, with my feet pointing at my wife's brand new, very expensive car, with no spotter, in Utah in January, so well below freezing, I did my all-time best in the incline bench press. I added 15 pounds to it, and I did it for a double. I could have done more reps, and I could have done more weight, but I was all by myself. No spotters. I did 15 pounds more than I ever done in my life for two reps, and it was easy.
Right.
Well, people, it was, that's it. So what you're doing in the easy strength idea is you're, man, it's like every other aspect of life. It's like having a woman fall in love with you. Most people have stalker training programs. It's like, you know, the easy strength method is.
That is a great analogy.
Yeah. The easy strength method is, instead of trying to force that girl to go out with you, you know, using the, you know, what's that stuff that put over the mouth, you know, or, you know, you're gently coercing, coaxing your body to strength, and it works really well. I'm to the point now with my coaching method that I'm to the point now that I'm so against failure that I believe, and I had a coach tell me this years ago, if you miss an Olympic lift, that session is over, go home.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, in the Olympic list, man, there's a good chance you could miss a warm-up. Well, all of a sudden, if you had that theory, every warm-up becomes very serious because you don't want to go home. So with my throwers now, I have this new... I used to have a theory, if you fouled, you ran a lap. If it went out of bounds, you ran a lap. Now I'm thinking, if you foul or it goes out of bounds, you go home. Well, my thought process is a real athlete will sneak back in later and can practice. But I need to be so in your face about failure. Because you know what? In 1975, the best throw of my high school career was on my last throw. And it was a beauty. And all my dreams would have come true if it had stayed in bounds.
Oh, shit.
All. Well, all my dreams came true, but don't worry. But my point, they had to come earlier. So, if you foul your best throw, you lose big time. And plus, the burden around your chest for the rest of your life that I woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Right.
Which is something I actually still do sometimes. I woulda, coulda, shoulda that day.
So with that rule, you're increasing focus in training, in practice, and you're also... probably improving or protecting confidence, right?
Well, that's a very, never thought of that. I was thinking more, it ramps up your arousal for even warm-ups.
Okay.
But I like where your head's at. I think that's something I'll have to think about a little bit. So arousal levels, explain that real quick. I think arousal levels are the key mental attribute of athletics. Now, there's three things. I think you have to have your heart rate where your heart rate needs to be for performance. So if you spend all your time practicing free throws, talking about sex and boobs or whatever, and your heart rate's at 80, when your heart rate's at 140, that's a different, because you're playing the game.
Right,
that's
people booing you.
That's
like
a totally different.
Right.
So you need to train at the heart rate you compete at.
Okay.
So for a thrower, you got to actually wear a heart rate monitor and get a sense of where your heart rate is. It's funny because they did a study with soccer players. they were thinking they were choking, but the truth is, they were doing drills at 90 heartbeats a minute and saying, but the game was played with 140.
Right.
So they just, the whole capacity. The second thing is tension and relaxation. Mm-hmm. So tension is tension. You're squeezing your muscles. Mm-hmm. And for some things like deadlifts, you can have a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. But there are other things in life you don't want a lot of attention. Bud Winters is the one that discovered that physical tension and physical relaxation led to mental tension and mental relaxation, which leads us to the third one, the crowning joy of what I think is psychological training for athletes, is arousal levels. So to deadlift, you probably want to be at about 9. To throw the discus, you want to be at 4. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're warming up and there's no ring judge around and you throw your lifetime best, well, it's because your arousal level. Mm-hmm. Now you walk away and I just threw my best, I can throw better. And you click your arousal letter up. Well, your first three throws go clang, clang, clang into the cage. Mm-hmm. Where do you want your arousal level to be in the snatch isn't the same as where you want it to be in the clean and jerk. Mm-hmm. When I played football, the arousal level for a kickoff, you need to crank yourself up on each and every kickoff. Mm-hmm. It's we used to call it suicide runs.
Right.
Especially when I played, man, when they could cut you. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd be sprinting down and a guy would blindside cut your legs. That was dangerous.
Yeah. Man.
Holy cow, that was dangerous. But playing, when I was playing defense, I needed to be, I wasn't a lineman, I was on the second level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had to let things kind of happen. So I had to keep my eyes, you know, wide vision. I had to see a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I had to remember the scouting report. I had to take things into account. The ball snapped. All these things are, oh, okay. The scouting report was correct. They're all going in that direction. I need now to react and go. Mm-hmm. Now, if I read the wrong scouting report and started sprinting in the wrong direction, mm-hmm. and then I just pulled myself out of a play. You see what I just did on the arousal level there? So on kickoffs, you need a higher arousal level than you do playing defense. Mm-hmm. Quarterbacks need probably very low arousal. You know, they don't need to be leading the cheers.
More technical, they need to think.
So mastery of arousal control is the master component for successful athletics.
Absolutely.
And very few people talk about it. So I actually practice, I coach my athletes up and down in arousal. Okay. I try to teach them more arousal and less arousal. That was a long story to bring us back to this point. If I tell you, you miss a snatch, your workout is done today, that'll get you to practice your arousal level at the right place.
That's what I was
Even if
my
it's
question.
Only 60 kilos or 70 kilos, your arousal level will be, you're going to be at the right, you're not going to just be, oh, whatever, dude, it's just 60.
If I miss this, I'm going home.
If I miss this, I'm going home. So you move that arousal level, which is generally probably, I say, a 2 or 3 in the warm-ups for an Olympic lifter. You're going to get them to where they need to be, more in the 4 or 5 range.
Right.
Just because of that one silly little rule. Mm-hmm. But it's a good rule. It's a good rule. Mm-hmm. Because it makes them, you know, adapt their arousal levels.
It's genius.
Yeah.
Do you have any other actionable? Yeah, go ahead.
When we talk about, I think everything you learn in sports goes into life. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you meet a girl for the first time or, you know, your new love of your life, where do you want your arousal level to be? I mean, you want to be at 9?
Right.
You're so beautiful. Come on with me. God, she'd run screaming, you know? Or do you want to be at 1? Hey, you're kind of cute. And I know some guys get away with both, but, you know, your arousal level to meet. You know, when cops pull me over, I always raise my arousal level to yell at them. Mm-hmm. You know, I always, it's funny when I take cops and pull me over. It's like, what are you doing? Do you know why I pulled you over? No, I don't. Really? Honest to God. This one cop at the airport pulled me over because my daughter's license had expired.
Yeah.
I go, it's not my car. How would I know? Oh, sorry, sir. You know, I could impound your car. Really? You're going to impound my car? I have to drop my daughter off. Really? That's what you're going to do? Well, no, I'm sorry. Just make sure you do it, sir. Yeah, okay. You have a good day. You too.
No shit. I've never heard that one. Okay.
Oh, for the audience.
They're people too, right?
Hold on. For the audience, white, middle-aged male.
Right.
Some of you cannot do that.
Great call.
You'll get shot. They will put bullets in you. That's the hardest thing in my life. I can't believe. Here I am, a white middle-aged male, but I don't want to get into it. That see, didn't want to get.
That's for another one, huh?
Who doesn't respect a certain branch? And
yeah,
that's shocking. Enough. We'll move on. But so anything I teach in the performance area should carry over into every aspect
right.
of your life.
Right.
You know, there's a right arousal level for everything you do in
absolutely.
Life.
I couldn't agree more.
And so, you know, the way you order it, you get a table at a mm-hmm. restaurant, you know, there's an arousal level, mm-hmm. you know, you want to be at, you know, scream at the waiter is going to get a lot of loogie in your burger.
Right.
You know, so practice, you know, I raising my children, I can't believe how often I use sports mm-hmm. to practice where I should appropriately be as a mm-hmm. dad. You know, my daughter got suspended for school for punching a boy. She thought I'd be at 9. I had knocked myself down to 2. Mm-hmm. The principal said, "Why are you suspended, Kelly?" I punched the boy. Did he deserve it? Yes. Oh, okay. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So, you know,
right.
She one time at a party punched a girl in the face because she called her little sister, Lindsay, mm-hmm. called her a very negative term. Mm-hmm. And so my daughter punched another girl in the face. Everyone thought I'd be mad at her. I was like, well, no, she's defending her little sister. Mm-hmm. And you really should not let your daughter say offensive things.
Yeah.
You know, it was a mean reference.
Right, right.
So as a parent, you have to ride it up and down. Mm-hmm. And also, you need to fake arousal levels, too, if you're a parent. Mm-hmm. If something really isn't that bad, but it's a direction you don't want your child heading
right.
in, you raise your fake arousal level to mm-hmm. 8, and you yell at them over something, a safety thing,
right.
or you know, inappropriate behaviors. Yeah.
So this is obviously something you've been studying and practicing for many years.
Yeah.
This is probably I'm most interested in this in all of sports, right?
Yeah.
Where can people go? Like, what resources can they find? And what kind of other steps can they take to learn more
sure.
about this stuff?
You kids are lucky. They've reprinted Bud Winter's book, Relax and Win. Mm-hmm. I would say that's a real good resource to look at. A lot of the references historically it'll sound historical to you, but at the time, it was Bill Walsh, the coach at the 49ers. I mean, mm-hmm. it was, we're talking Muhammad Ali, you know, that era. Muhammad Ali is a great person to study for relax and win. Mm-hmm. Other resources, it's funny, there's just not a lot of arousal. I sometimes think I'm one of the few people who talks about mm-hmm. it. I can't find a lot of resources mm-hmm. on it.
There's a couple really boring sports psych books on it.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Okay. But when they talk about arousal, they're almost always talking about lowering it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of, I think they, no offense, I could be totally wrong. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think they take physical tension, physical relaxation, and mental tension and mental relaxation, and kind of don't understand that there are times where you want a freakishly large
right.
amount of tension.
Right. Like a back squat or deadlift.
Back squat. It's the powerlifting mm-hmm. one. That's why I always worry about powerlifters coaching football or track athletes mm-hmm. because their tension level is always at 9.
Right.
And we need more of a dial
yep.
in the other sports. So that would be a start. I was going to say Percy Sarity's books. Those are reprintable now.
Okay.
One of them has a good thing on what he called Stoicism. It's a Spartan and Stoic.
Stoughton or Stoicism?
Stoicism.
Stoicism. Okay.
It's a combination of being Stoic and being mm-hmm. Spartan. He invented the word, so you wouldn't recognize
right,
it.
Right.
And the other thing, if you get a chance, autobiographies are often very good mm-hmm. for that kind of thing. But you have to look for it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, sitting down and talking to the best of the best.
Yeah.
That's where I came up with the hangover rule.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked at how many world record performances came from guys coming out of real bad hangovers.
Yeah.
In the movie 4 Minute Mile, there's that famous scene with John Landy. Mm-hmm. He eats a meat pie before the event.
Mm-hmm.
John Landy was asked, is that real? He goes, no. Well, that's true, but there's more. I also had an ice cream sundae. And they go, why? He goes, I had a terrible hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Then goes off and runs the second or third
right,
4 minute
right.
mile. You know, John Powell famously pukes into a rose bush and then throws the world record in the
mm-hmm.
discus, you know. The hangover rule, because having a hangover probably allows you to dial your arousal level
right.
I'm not saying, folks, this is not go out and get totally drunk the night before the most important thing you ever do. Though, actually, it's funny when they have bachelor parties the day before a wedding. So we I don't know where you can go with what I just said. But, yeah, you can get a lot. You can get a lot from... There's a good book right there. I'm just looking at Fighting Back with Rocky Blyer. Fighting Back, you get some real insights into a guy who figures it out. He goes to Vietnam, gets his foot blown up, then ends up playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Super Bowl. Really? Yeah. Okay.
Great book. But you'll notice that great biographies that really kind of make you love them very often will have arousal control. As they don't call it arousal control, but if you're looking for it, you'll find it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It kind of seems to me there's not really one thing you can do and just immediately make a change on your arousal other than kind of like some breath stuff, but it's more of a practice and a focus. If you're paying attention over and over and over and over, you have more control.
But you can make it fairly. You got to be careful when I say scientific. To me, science is when you experiment and try things.
Right.
But you can get pretty close. Your heart rate, your physical tension, you know, do a plank as hard as you can, shake it off, and then throw the javelin. Mm-hmm. Do another plank, don't shake it off, throw the javelin. You can kind of play that way. You can also go the exact opposite of trying to get too loosey-goosey and throw. Mm-hmm. You know, like talk and laugh as you're approaching your throw. Be funny for a pitcher to do that. You know, just be funny. You know, because that's way too low of arousal for a pitcher. And then, of course, from there, then you jump to the big one, which is mental arousal. But I think so the heart rate is something you can look at. It's a number. Physical, the tension scale, I know when I'm at a 10. And I kind of know when I'm at a 1. You know, it's post-coitus in a hot tub smoking ganja. You know, sorry for the image.
Nothing
folks.
Wrong with that, folks.
Sorry for the image on that. But, you know, you don't want to be deadlifting or, you know, post-coitus in a hot tub throwing the discus. Mm-hmm. You want to be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So you practice getting there.
Right.
So, yes, you said practice, but I also said there are some things.
Yeah.
There are some pieces of information you can get. Mm-hmm. So you can get it from people who've gone there before, good coaches, or if you don't have either, you can figure this out for yourself.
Right.
Be interesting to figure out at what heart rate do you converse the best at. That'd be an interesting thing.
Really?
When you're on your most
game. I bet that's different for everyone. Huh?
It'd be interesting. You know.
I was doing some research before I came over, and I came across a term you use called internal pressure. And think, you know, it hasn't been talked about a lot in strength and conditioning. I feel like it's on the rise. Can you explain that to the listeners and why that's so important?
Yeah, I call it anaconda strength.
Yeah, exactly.
It is this idea that, and it comes from the throwing arts and the power lifts, is that to be truly strong and centered, I need to push out. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it right now. I'm pushing it out.
Right.
Like you're going to have a bowel movement in some ways, though that's not entirely true. And I can teach it to an athlete by carrying heavy bags, bear hug style.
Yep.
So we have about an 80, 90-pound bag. And when you carry it, the next day you notice that you're kind of sore in places you don't really know. Well, it's because your body was pushing out to support this weird load you're asking. Mm-hmm. When you throw the hammer, people say, that must be hard on your back. And they go, yeah, the next day you're sore, but it's not your back. Mm-hmm. It's that internal pressure to deal with this ball flying around your head.
Right.
And I think wrestlers and judo fighters know it. They know what I'm talking about. And I think powerlifters really know what I'm talking about. But very few other sports play with it. Mm-hmm. But internal pressure is something that if you could teach a football player in the off season to ramp up that internal pressure on a goal line stand, instead of, you know, I don't know, folding or bending, he could practice squeeze, you know, that and, you know, make himself a stone in the ground, you know, versus just, you know, a bendy hinge.
So what's really going on? We're engaging our spinal erectors, internal obliques.
I don't know.
Perineum, all of those internal core muscles.
Well, I know for sure your diaphragm.
Yeah.
Because trying to breathe on bear hug walks
is,
you know, really a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
We have one little thing called bear. We do bear crawls followed by bear hug walks. Mm-hmm. And that odd combination just really seems to cut into people's abilities to breathe.
Right, yep.
Because it's like
locomotion followed by the bracing. Yep.
And people get very tired and dizzy. They'll drop the bag and sway. And I'm talking about young people. You know, I mean, I sway a lot. You know, right. Geez, I'm 58. But, so that's something you just have to add into your program. Mm-hmm. You just, and once you do it, in fact, I'm working with a guy who's coming back. He retired as an elite athlete. He's coming back. And one of the things he's discovered is the loaded carry family is far better for him, mm-hmm. for his athletic choice, than all the crap he used to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all he used to train like a bodybuilder, a power lifter, an Olympic lifter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all fine, except it didn't get him close. I mean, he got a big engine,
yep.
but it didn't necessarily help him with the goal at hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but when he does the loaded carries, it's like, I can't explain how it works. Mm-hmm. I can't either. Well, then just because we can't explain it,
right?
Well, I could care less if I can't explain it.
Mm-hmm.
We think we're so inside. You know, 100 years from now, they'll just laugh at what we think about the human body.
Right.
I'm from that school of thought that there's one muscle, and the fascia divides it up into all these other components.
Okay.
And that's why when people start talking, and I'm fine with Yonda, you need to build the deltoids, triceps, abs, glutes. I'm fine with all that. But at the same time, I think 100 years from now, they'll look at us and say, guys, you guys thought there were 600 muscles?
Mm-hmm.
No, there's one. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know how to explain it, but
right.
So that was my thought. Okay. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
So you came up primarily a power athlete. Are there any common misconceptions about building power that you can clear up?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it looks like Tarzan plays like Jane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, power. Pardon me again. You know, these guys do these bodybuilding programs. They work on their guns and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's probably the last thing you want is Frankenstein muscles.
Mm-hmm. So as you're getting older, do you have any recommendations on when people, guys, girls, should back off of training volume or any guidelines for aging athletes?
Well, no, I would actually disagree with that.
Okay.
I would say the key is in your youth, try to master as many things as you can.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have an appropriate, authentic squat, by God, get one.
Mm-hmm.
A nice, deep squat.
Right.
Because that'll help long-term with the joints and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Greg Cook always says, increase the deadlift, maintain the squat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some truth to that. Don't write checks in your youth you can't cash, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people back in the day used to say you never need anything more than a 400-pound squat.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly, when I look back at my career, my most outstanding years were when I had about a 400-pound squat. I just, mm-hmm. I can probably squat 400, you know, on heroin. I mean, it just,
mm-hmm.
but when I kept pushing it up, it didn't. So squats are great,
mm-hmm.
but once you get to a certain point, they just don't have the payoff. Okay. If you decide to have a big bench, that's fine, but you better spend a couple of years thinking about the opposite.
Movement. Right.
So the best thing you can kind of do is early as you can is read Yonda and realize that as you age, the deltoids, the triceps, the glutes, and the abs weaken.
Mm-hmm.
And the hamstrings, the hip flexors, the pecs, and the biceps tighten.
Mm-hmm.
So stretch the pecs, stretch the biceps, stretch the hip flexors, stretch the hip flexors, stretch the hip flexors,
mm-hmm.
stretch the hamstrings. You know, do as many overhead presses as you can. Swing, goblet squats, sprint up hills, pull sleds. Get that butt as strong right. as you can possibly get.
Why the overhead press?
Deltoids and triceps.
Okay.
Versus bench, the pecs yep. coming too much. And there's nothing, again, I want you to think that the bench is bad. But when you're talking about something that's a long-term investment,
mm-hmm.
I would think also, too, one other thing that comes up from Nassim Taleb and some of the others in that area, the idea of the check mark, the hockey stick. you should either train very intensely or you should go for long walks. The middle stuff tends to be the bigger problem as you age. Okay. So when you decide to go into the gym to work out, you know, get it done and get out. And then go for a long walk with your dog or the love of your life. So, well, there's another thing too. I would tell people, you know, I love this thing people now will say, hey, I'm 12,000 steps today. I think there's some great value to that. Walking is an underrated long, it's like, okay, you decide to play a pickup basketball game tonight and you hurt your ankle badly and it requires a lot of work. 50 years from now, you still have that same ankle.
Yeah.
So that's that, to me, that's that writing the check you might not be able to cash later on. You do some stupid thing. You do too many bench presses.
Yeah.
That's the check writing, okay?
Absolutely.
Walking and goblet squats and even Turkish get-ups, that kind of world, those restorative training movements tend to, down the line, pay off wonderfully.
Right.
So any kind of tumbling you do will help when you're my age, if you do accidentally fall. Mm-hmm. At my age, statistically, it's better to get cancer than to fall. Survival-wise.
Right.
Yeah. Cancer survivors, you hear a lot about. You don't hear a lot about fall survivors. Mm-hmm. You know, you break a joint at my age, it's you don't come back.
Right. You're in a wheelchair.
And then go downhill. Right. Okay. Right. So walking, goblet squats, Turkish get-ups, I think swings. There's your perfect program where you're actively trying to keep yourself mobile and moving. I think that's the investment. In your youth, I would try to find things that agree with you. Try to find a way of eating that you can sustain. Try to learn, honestly, like Josh Hills would say, you know, taking a cooking class and being in a relationship where shopping and cooking are important probably will do more value for you at your 60s than, you know, getting the perfect curl program or bicep program. Because loving cooking, loving food prep, tonight we're going out because we have to go do an errand. But most nights when you're here at my house at this time, you will smell dinner.
Right.
You know, last night, I'm sorry, everybody. Last night I made a stew at 8 o'clock in the morning. I put the ingredients in and I slow cooked the stew the entire day. So that by the time for the meal, the stew meat, which was, you know, one step from rock, was delightfully tender and perfect. You know, the potatoes were fantastic. So this sounds weird, but a good stew preparation is a good image of what you want your life to be.
Let's see. So you are 60 right now, you said?
58.
After about 50 years in the strength training world, is there anything that you look back and tell the 25 to 30-year-old Dan John, that anything you would do differently?
Yeah, there's a great book called Great Books by Dave Denby. And there's two things the professors tell him. He's a man who's an older guy, who goes back to freshman and sophomore classes at Columbia and rereads the great books as an adult. It's beautiful. You know, you young people, I mean, if you don't have kids, reading Abraham's Sacrifice of Isaac is just reading. But if you have kids, it breaks your heart. If you read King Lear as a 19-year-old, okay, Shakespeare, blah, blah, blah. But if you read King Lear with a mother or father who has dementia, it'll bring you to tears. So he goes back and the professor's right. One thing on the board is think double, which I think is the master quality. You'll notice I never think things are good or bad. This is partially from my education, very, very strong education. And one of the things you got to learn to live with if you have a good education is paradoxes. You know, it's okay. Well, Dan, isn't this good? No, it's not good. Don't quit judging it. And the other thing they write is don't believe everything. Don't believe the bullshit is what he says.
Right.
And the hardest thing you guys have coming up is I'm telling you that to get strong with weights, to get flexible stretch, the best recovery I know is sleep. The best hydration tool I know is water, and good clean food is going to do more for you than all. I can't make a nickel on anything I just told you.
Right.
So to sell you, I have mm-hmm. to, I have to tell you there's something behind the door.
Right.
So the biggest problem is anytime you get away from sleep, water, basic strength training, mm-hmm. going for long walks, that's not bad. Stretching, you know.
Yeah.
Anytime you go past that little base, mm-hmm. then you have to start questioning things. Mm-hmm. Now, you can say, well, Dan, creatine works for me. And I would say to you, well, why does it work for you? Well, then we find out that you don't eat enough protein. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, now I am eating more protein. When that, what's happening? Does creatine affect you? Not like I thought. Well, you know, if you eat eggs and, you know, good meat every day and fish and, you know, creatine might not have the effect on mm-hmm. a kid who doesn't eat enough.
Right.
So that would be the number one thing is don't believe the bullshit.
I love that. Let's see. I got a few more quick questions before we wrap it up. I think you know my old teammate, Tommy Hackenbrook. He wanted me to ask you, is there any correlation between good looks and how much a man can squat?
In my case, yes. I'm fabulous. Since they can't see me, I'm really a good-looking guy and I have a big squat. Mm-hmm. No. God, no. Jeez. There is... Boy, I tell you, good looks are about as much as a curse as early puberty, isn't it? Man, these I tell you, when you teach long enough, you start to get, you know... I started teaching in 1979. You know, I retired in 2010. And you get a chance to really start to see... people who win high school, mm-hmm. you know, and fail in life. You mm-hmm. see that a lot, you know. Very often it's the boys who hit puberty early. Mm-hmm. And very often it's the very, very pretty girls. Mm-hmm. You know, they're able to open a few doors. And one day, you know, the famous first edition of the first Sex in the City show, it all flips at about 28, 29. And all of a sudden, you know... You're beautiful and you got a great body, and is that all there is? Mm-hmm. You know, as the great Peggy Lee song would go. No. So, yes. In his case, yes. In most cases, no.
Yeah. When you hear the word successful, who's the first person that comes to mind?
You know, I'm glad you said that, because one of the things I teach in my workshops is that there's goal setting and then there's success. Mm-hmm. A lot of people achieve their goals, but they're not successful. Mm-hmm. So you can be very... achieved, knocked down every goal you ever had and be a lousy, no good bastard. Mm-hmm. Successful. Well, I mean, I would have to put my college coach, Ralph Maughan, you know, he died July 3rd, 2006. And I'm here, I'm talking about him. He drafted by the Detroit Lions, made an Olympic team as a hammer thrower, was a national champion of the javelin. That's not bad, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the Battle of the Bulge, he got 2 Purple Hearts and a Bronze Star. Mm-hmm. And then he got bored while he was coaching at Utah State, so he got a master's degree in math just because to keep himself going. He taught men, their sons, and their grandsons in his coaching career. Mm-hmm. And when he died, hundreds if not thousands of people across the world stopped in their tracks and said, "No, dear God, he's gone." Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's to me successful. Dick Knottmeyer, my coach, you know, he volunteered all those hours. For 25 cents a week, he coached me for 25 cents a week, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. Yeah, he changed the lives of so many people. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's success, you know. Mm-hmm. It's success to me, of course, is making sure, as the great monk Thomas Merton said, you know, when you... when you get to the top of the ladder, you better make sure the ladder's on the right wall. Mm-hmm. To me, it's all about the wall. Which wall are you on?
Right.
Yeah. And I have to agree with what Earl Nightingale said. You know, success is the realization of a worthy goal. And he then said, the next sentence was, I can't imagine any school teacher not being considered a success. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was beautiful.
That's awesome.
So for me, someone like my daughter, Kelly, she's the middle girl in that picture there. Mm-hmm. That's Kelly. And she's the bride in that picture. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a school teacher, and she's got a fundraiser going right now because the kids at her school don't always do that well financially. They don't have computers. So she's getting computers for all of her students. Mm-hmm.
pretty amazing.
So to me, that's success.
Right. That leads me to my last question. What do you want to be remembered for?
Oh, shit. That's a good one. I don't know. What do I want to be remembered for? Well, here, my doctor is a former student of mine. My lawyer is a former student of mine. My mortician is a former student of mine. Professors all across this nation are former students of mine. School teachers throughout this state are former students of mine. Great parents, great people, great community people are all former students of mine. When I see them, they always, very often, will thank me and they'll say it's weird. Every so often, I'll think about a lecture you gave. And it's like, okay. And, you know, I would hope that, you know, in the poet Leonardo Alishan, you know, in his great book, I mean, you can't have a better title, Dancing Barefoot on Broken Glass. I mean, what a beautiful title. He talks about, he does a redo of creation. It's called a poem called Creation Part One. And he talks about God, and he says, and kindness he held in the palm of his hand. You know, that's, I would hope people would remember the fact that I wanted to punch you in the face with love. Mm-hmm. You know, you wanted to play football. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make you a football player if it kills both of us, mm-hmm. you know, but it was always with kindness, always with love. Even when I was screaming at you, mm-hmm. it was because I just expected right. That'd be the legacy. With my writing, with that, I think there'll be some, that will have some catch, you know, that'll hook for a while, you know, until someone prettier comes along, you know.
Hopefully not. Yeah. Hopefully not.
But that would be it. You know, hopefully, you know, the legacy of learning mm-hmm. would be, what do I learn? You know, I talk about my books. My wife and I, our family mission statement is make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we donate our time, our treasure, our talents to a lot of organizations. Mm-hmm. We find organizations that are under fire and try to help them. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because we help Catholic schools and then Planned Parenthood mm-hmm. because we have no problem.
Right.
We see that we help people who are under siege as much as we can.
Yep.
You know, I feel I'm a very strong person and put on this earth with a strong mind and a strong body. It's my job to defend the weak. Mm-hmm. Literally defend the weak or help the weak defend too when necessary. And that would be the legacy, I'd hope. I mean, I hope.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
Make a difference.
Coach, you have your new book, Before We Go, coming out. What else should people be aware of on the horizon? Where can they find you? All of that stuff.
Sure. Well, it's Before We Go's out, but there's a series. The series of books, the Intervention, Can You Go?, and the next one, Now What, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to do is reverse engineer the way I coach. Mm-hmm. So that would be, Now What hopefully will be out, you know, sooner than later. You know, in the calendar year, I've published 3 books. Mm-hmm. Fat Loss Happens on Monday with Josh. Can You Go? And Before We Go, the last week, I guess. So I don't know if I can knock out another book within mm-hmm. 4 months, but I think I'm on the right track already. I can see this book taking a little bit longer because I'm really trying to. Now What is simply this. We've assessed you. We've decided what you need. Now what? Mm-hmm. And everyone says, well, we'll train them. Right. For how long? Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to do dynamic mobility and then touch their toes. Mm-hmm. Well, no, okay. Now what, you know, what long term, and that's right. It's gonna be where I'm going with that. Okay,
love it.
Yeah,
danjohn.net.
Danjohn.net.
Okay, yeah. Are you on social media? I assume so.
Yeah, there's a place called Daniel John Strength Coach on Facebook.
Okay,
and that's, I mean, honest to God. Oh, and then there's a Q&A over at davedraper.com. Okay. And if any of you can't find any of it, just email me and I'll just send it to you.
So no one-liners on Twitter for you?
There is a fake Dan John.
Fake Dan John.
And the funny thing is, it's really funny when it's actually me.
Right.
The things I actually say are very funny.
Yeah.
I don't mean to. Like I said at a workshop to somebody, I said, you know, I like you, and that's the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, shit, the crap that comes out of my mouth when I see it later, just makes me laugh. Mm-hmm. It's like, God, I just, the way I say things to people.
Well, you've given me some good analogies. I love the I love the picking up chicks one. That's gold.
Yeah. Well, I hope you learn more on that. But okay. Well, I appreciate this,
Coach. This has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you came.